Hello and welcome to Fraggle Talk Classic, the unofficial Fraggle Rock podcast brought to you by toughpigs.com. My name is Beth, and I am rewatching for the millionth time.
My name is Julia, and I'm rewatching for the first time in 10 years.
Howdy, folks. Come on down to Adam's time watching a Fraggle Rock store. What are you looking for? Gotta warn you, we're out of seconds and thirds. We've only got firsts.
Great, now I have to bleep your last name.
Oh, crap. Can I just do another take?
No, it's fine.
No one felt so prepared.
I pulled it out of my 2 seconds beforehand.
Dang.
So
that's okay. Bleeping is easy and fun, actually.
Oh yeah, it's so fun that I'm gonna make
yeah
editor Beth bleep so many.
This is the episode where we all say
this is the one. Really? Okay.
I guess so.
It's happening.
Side bottom definitely would say. Anyway, but like in a fun way.
Yeah.
Oh, the energy.
Anyways.
So today we are talking about episode 6 of season 2, Boober's Dream. This originally aired on February 6, 1984, and of course, written by Jocelyn Stevenson, directed by George Bloomfield.
Today we're talking about IFN parentheses Fraggle Rock Edition is what we're talking about.
I don't know what that means.
What? Oh my god, it's my favorite new therapy. Okay, we'll get there.
Okay, great.
It's really cool.
I love new therapies.
It's a good one, too. It's not like the bad kinds.
So, we open in the workshop, of course, and what a cute little setup. Doc is wearing his pajamas and a bathrobe that looks remarkably similar to Fraser's dad's ugly chair. Like, I pulled up a side-by-side comparison, and they are remarkably similar.
What a pull.
Yeah, that's a deep cut, and I'm impressed.
The bathrobe looks like the armchair that Martin Crane would sit in on the TV show Frasier.
It's not a deep cut for me. It's one of those shows that I would watch with my mom over and over again.
That's fair.
Fair. My only note for this is, of course, Doc eats raisin bread. Of course he does.
Oh my god, I was over at my friend's house, and I was like, wow, you know you're an adult when you start to eat Raisin Bran and be like, oh, this is actually kind of good.
I have not gotten there yet.
Okay.
Me neither.
Nope. Okay,
still
you're safe.
Still gross cardboard.
You're safe.
Gross, disgusting cardboard. Give me my oatmeal.
And Doc is telling Sprocket about the strange dream he had last night.
With these little furry creatures with tails that are about yay high, and he makes his hands be about as far apart as from his feet to his knees.
Mm-hmm.
What could those be?
They handed him a pair of red and white striped socks, too.
Mm-hmm. Which obviously is a metaphor for peppermint.
Oh, interesting. I did look it up.
What?
Oh, like the meaning of socks?
Dream interpretation. Well, specifically clothes.
Okay.
So, when I went to dreamdictionary.org.
Sponsored by.
Apparently. When I searched for socks, 0 entries. When I searched for clothes, it said, clothes are symbolic in dreams that represent the dreamer's identity, confidence, and how they may relate to others in social situations. The image becomes a metaphor for something that is not felt, but seen by others. This powerful symbol connects with persona in psychology, the personality that an individual projects to others, as differentiated from the authentic self. Clothes reflect the dreamer's confidence or deep-rooted insecurity that dwells under the mask they wear in public. You will be offered many metaphoric clues in your dreams to see if you are suited for the role or have trouble fitting in. And I was like, yo, this is just a dream about neurodivergent masking.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Although it is very sweet because Doc very clearly kind of doesn't mask.
Yeah.
And so obviously he'd be comfortable wearing like garish, not fashionable socks. Because
mm-hmm.
they'd be comfortable and he likes them. And so, yeah, that fits very well metaphorically.
Yeah.
I just also appreciate that we got, because Gobo sneaks in and grabs the traveling mat card. It's one whole take, and as Doc is really excited talking about dreams, the line he says is, that's right, Sprocket, from now on we pay attention, as Gobo just like sneaks in the open and grabs the card and then leaves.
As Sprocket is desperately trying to get his attention to see, mm-hmm. oh my god, the Fraggle is here, the thing you are talking about now.
Yes. Also, again, I think I said it, but that was done in one shot, and it was really smooth and felt very natural.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back to the Fraggle Rock and we get more establishing shots with doozers. I'm so like, the evidence is mounting. Any minute now we're gonna get a doozer episode. I'm so excited.
I'm excited for you to get there too.
So Wembley's walking in and Boober's sleeping. And there's this cool little bit, which also, did anybody else just get like a little flashback to that one song from Avenue Q when a puppet walks in on another puppet that's sleeping and sleep talking?
I don't remember that moment in Avenue Q.
Fantasies Come True, I think, is the one.
That it's is where the song.
Roommate who's gay and in the closet and has a crush on his straight roommate is like falls asleep and dreams that he's walking in on his straight roommate dreaming about him. It's a weird Inception style thing that I think one of the better beats in a relatively weird and didn't age well play.
That's true.
Although on the plus side, what we got out of it is John Tartaglia.
Fair. I didn't say all of it didn't age well. There's definitely some bits in there that are really solid. But yeah, it was kind of sweet. And it's interesting because Boober seems like he's having a good time in the dream. He's like laughing and being like, oh, those jokes are there. And then he wakes up. He's like, oh, what a terrible nightmare.
Yeah. So did anyone notice the little sounds Wembley was making as he walked by? Because I think this is the first time we've gotten them.
No.
No.
He's got this little, like, I cannot reproduce it. It is a uniquely Steve Whitmire thing, because even the actor who's playing Wembley in Back to the Rock can't reproduce it. It's like a nasally, like, punctuated kind of.
Sounds like the beginning of a Linkin Park song.
I did notice that, but I didn't realize this was the first time he was doing it.
And then that one guy starts rapping.
Hang on, I'm gonna find it. Wembley noise.
Wembley noise. Oh, there's a whole section on it in the tone.
No, that's what my bookmark says.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
One particular idiosyncrasy Whitmire brought to Wembley was his habit of punctuating his own and other Fraggles' conversations with squeaks, boinks, and other unique sounds. This affectation started with a head cold Whitmire caught as the first season began shooting. Before each take, the congested puppeteer would clear his throat. This segued into Wembley clearing his throat, and soon enough, it went from being throat-clearing into a percussion instrument, explains Whitmire. Hmm. And then it became Wembley. He did it every time he walked into a room.
That's cute.
Dave Gull swears that Whitmire would make the sounds when he was off-duty as well.
Of course he would. We meld the characters we love and become. The voice actor, Neil, what's his name, the voice actor for Asterion from Baldur's Gate 3, has said that he now just has Asterion's giggle. Like, that's just his now.
I love that stuff.
It's very sweet. So, Boober's having a nightmare.
Even though it doesn't sound like a nightmare. And he tells Wembley that he's been dreaming of this, I guess, like, internal creation called Side Bottom, which we don't know at this point what Side Bottom looks like, except he does say that Side Bottom resembles a green potato, and then Wembley points out, oh, kind of like you. Which there's also a beat, like, even before we get to Boober waking up from the dream, where Wembley tells Gobo, like, oh, I'm gonna go, like, help Boober clean his room. And then what Gobo says, I love Boober, but I think he looks about as much fun as potatoes. So I guess they've all decided that Boober looks like a green potato.
I mean, we could also just say that green potatoes look like Boober, but no, nobody says that.
And Wembley's like, gee, I always thought potatoes were a riot.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, potatoes are a riot. You can use them to engage in property damage to try to gain leverage over the ruling class.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, uncooked potatoes, right?
I mean, third comedic beat.
What?
So anyways, so they talk about what to do about this dream. And I love this, because they don't even say we should go talk to the trash heap. They just smash cut and they're talking to the trash heap.
Yeah.
Which is such a great, like, cinematic way to express, like, oh yeah, this is so much easier for them to do now, and they can do it casually. Just boom, now we're there.
Yep. So Marjorie's doing this thing where she's, like, you come to someone to complain, and they go, well, you know, these are your choices. And they all stink. If you don't want this choice, then you gotta, you know, do this other choice.
She has a great line about it. She says, there's small choice between rotten radishes.
Yep.
And that's a very evocative and effective metaphor. Like, all right, which of these rotten radishes do you want? There's not that much of a difference.
Mm-hmm. So initially she's like, the only thing you can do is learn to live with Side Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And Boober says, impossible. Like, that's something he's not even willing to consider until he goes on his whole character arc.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, it's like, well, you'll just have to stay awake then.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
And she says, or, you know, share the dream.
Yeah.
Which is a nice reminder that Fraggles can dream communally.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to remember. So obviously the last episode of season one, we get them all sharing the same nightmare. Is this the first time it's been laid out so clearly, the dream sharing trait of Fraggles?
Yes. Yes. So okay. This is the first time we've seen them share dreams intentionally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or in cave shinnily. I don't think they're camping.
Wow. Okay.
Oh my god.
You were saying, I'm sorry. I told you before we started recording, this episode's gonna have energy.
I mean, Sidebottom's all over it. He's very happy right now.
Yep.
Let's go meet him, okay.
Oh my goodness.
Hey, y'all wanna play freeze tag? I love freeze tag. Sorry, listener, that we haven't gotten to that part. I can be the order Muppet, I promise. I'm sorry.
No, I'm the tired Muppet.
I can find the reins. Where is it?
So we get Wembley and Boober about to dream share, and we see kind of how, when it's intentional, it's performed, where they've got to, like, be touching heads, and they have to say something too, right?
Yeah.
What do you know what it is, Beth?
So if they're just saying it, the line is, dream a dream and see what a dream can be. Later we'll get a whole song.
Yeah.
But for this, that seems to be the minimum, is that they have to have their heads touching and then say that line.
Say like a little spell.
Yeah. It's cute. It's like a little ritual. I also just love the dialogue. Boober's like, I appreciate you sharing the stream with me. And Wembley's like, oh, don't mention it. And Boober says, but I already did. And Wembley says, okay, mention it.
That's good. I love the Boober-Wembley dynamic, which we've gotten several times before. And I think that they work so well because Dave and Steve are such good friends. And you can really see that in their relationship. They just bounce off together so wonderfully and so sweetly.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
This is also, I think it's the second episode in a row where they're able to take a Fraggle from awake to asleep without changing out the puppets, just because of how they set up the shot.
How they tilt the head back.
Exactly. They're hiding Wembley's wide awake eyes behind Boober's head.
Boober's non-existent eyes.
Yes.
I also love that as soon as they get into the dream world, Wembley just starts flying. Like, of course Wembley can lucid dream.
Of course.
It's phenomenal. Fun fact, I can fly in dreams, but I'm not, like, good at it.
Oh.
I need to do, like, a running start, and I have to, like, bounce a couple of times.
Oh, I sometimes get stuck that way, but most of the time I'm able to do it.
I can get there, I just, like, it's rocky.
Yeah, it took me, like, at least a solid decade to learn how to fly in my dreams, and now when it's something that I remember that I can do, then I'm able to get out of any situation. And that was amazing for years and years. And then recently, the thing that I was trying to get away from in the dream flew after me. It could fly too. And I was like, how dare you?
That is so is perfectly space. On theme with this episode. That's crazy. Right?
Oh, man. I was so mad at my own brain.
Oh, man. You mean the things I don't want to have to face are eventually going to evolve and grow the same way that I do? Oh, no. You mean the other parts of myself are, in fact, parts of myself, and like me, they are malleable and capable of growth and adaptation? Oh, heck.
Oh, man.
Beans.
Oh, beans.
Oh, f***. Haha, that's a callback to the earlier thing where that has to get bleeped again.
See, I was going to put that as the little thing at the end, but...
Not if we say f*** too many times during the episode. Then it's gotta be a running gag. Speaking of the flying, this is jumping ahead a bit further in the episode, but a thing I noticed is, Wembley, once he gets in the dream, immediately starts flying, and later we will see the other Fraggles come in and also start flying. We do not see Boober fly in his own dream until literally, like, when the resolve has happened and he's leaving the dream, we see him fly away. And so, there, it feels so purposeful of, like, this whole situation's, like, weighing him down, and he will not allow himself to have fun in his dream. And I guess this leads into the character of Sidebottom, which Several years ago on Twitter, the only like meme I've ever attempted to make is one of those, if you can't handle me at my this, you can't handle me, you can't have me at my that. And it was a picture of Boober and side bottom.
Hell yes.
Wait, no, but hold on. Which was it? Is it if you can't handle me at my side bottom, you don't deserve me at my Boober? Or
well,
is it if
you thing.
Can't
so,
handle me at my Boober, you don't deserve me at my
been
side bottom?
So long, I made it, if you can't handle me at my Boober, you can't have me at my side bottom. And it's funny because I think now going through the episodes, I probably would like swap them because of how much I love Boober.
That makes sense, yeah.
But it'd been a long time. Yeah, Sidebottom, who I thought was like a season three appearance, so I was delighted that this episode was coming now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, this was awesome. And I appreciate that we get to see Sidebottom, and Boober is just like terrified and deeply uncomfortable of Sidebottom, and everyone else is like, yo, I love this guy. Because I've had those moments where I'm like, this person? No. My brain just goes, not that person. Everyone's like, what are you tripping out about?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say I'm right all the time, but like a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Which we will get to the compare and contrast between the two of them as we continue. But first we get to meet Sidebottom and he plays a lovely little jig.
Oh, yes.
Just like a nice little jig.
We also get a lot of doozers in the background, just like being super merry and into it.
Just doozing.
Yeah, he's telling jokes to doozers.
Mm-hmm.
We get this wonderful, because it's the Dream Realm and they can do whatever they want,
mm-hmm.
they use a lot of, like, overlay technique.
Yeah.
Where something will be, like, kind of transparent and they'll mm-hmm. just whoosh it across the screen mm-hmm. over everything else. And I really appreciate that Sidebottom has laundry hanging up that is, like, two-dimensional cutouts.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I noticed the laundry in the background. Full disclosure, I watched this episode at like midnight last night.
Oh my god, me too.
And I remember looking at it being like, why is there just clothing in the background? But duh, because Boober is obsessed with laundry, but it is like a more cartoony, unrealistic version of laundry, as it would be like in a dream when everything is so unrealistic sometimes.
Exactly.
Fun.
It's also the second time that we've gotten a Fraggle Rock song lyric that has rhymed south with mouth. By indicating that feet go there.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense, because feet all do need to move, like, south for the winter. That's how they migrate.
Through your mouth?
I mean, some of them.
Oh my god.
I see, my favorite thing about that joke is it was clearly only funny because you're all as tired as I am. So, listener, I hope you didn't sleep well last night so you can key into this humor and it's not just, what?
For me, it's just I'm feeling so disorganized. Ugh. And when I'm, like, trying to juggle too many pieces, my brain can't latch on to any one of them.
That's fair. We'll get there. We'll get there. Julia,
we'll get there.
Julia has volunteered as the Order Muppet, and I can and will run support when
I
remember
to. When did I volunteer
to.
As the Order? I have volunteered as the Tired Muppet.
You just did the thing. You got
We're
us back
turns.
On track, and you've done it twice now.
We're taking turns with the collective brain cell. It's okay.
It's Julia's turn with the brain cell. Mom!
Okay. Here's the thing. I love Sidebottom's outfit. Like, he's jangly.
Really
he's got,
good.
Like, a hat. His hair is slightly longer than Boober's. It feels like more feathery and flowy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, there's so much, like, gaudiness, like...
It's whimsical.
And whimsicalness, the way he's dressed, as opposed to Boober, who's just got, like, his little scarf and his little hat.
Yeah. Boober is very practical, and Sidebottom mm-hmm. is the opposite of practical.
Yes!
Yeah. Sidebottom loves jokes and singing and making doozers laugh.
And we get the introduction of this whoopee cushion?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was that?
Let's talk about this guy, whose sole purpose seems to be to fly in, like, a little puffy magic carpet ravioli thing and go whoopee and occasionally bonk people on the head and then fly out again.
Do the Fraggles have whoopee cushions? Does this whoopee cushion come back? What is going
More
on?
More importantly, are whoopee cushions technically ravioli?
They are inedible large like if you sat on a ravioli and it was big enough, it probably would make a farting noise. You know?
Probably.
Whoopee cushions are ravioli.
Oh my God.
They probably don't taste good.
No.
Neither does some ravioli.
Hmm.
So, at some point, we're going to have to talk about, is there, and if so, what is it, a proper official spelling of the word whoopee? Because the tome spells it I-E, like the brand name Whoopee Pie.
Mm-hmm.
Whoopee cushion spells it E-E.
Mm-hmm.
And Muppet Wiki does both. And then, of course, there's Whoopi Goldberg with just an I and no E's.
She's her own entity.
Yeah.
So I guess the moral is spell it however you want, as long as it's fun, which is the whole point.
Yeah, that seems like the Fraggle way to approach it.
Cool.
Is that why the Whoopi cushion is there? Because they live by the word Whoopi. Like, that's something we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dream. And so that's like a reinterpretation of that word. Is that it?
Probably.
And because Sidebottom's silly?
And he's the manifestation of fun, then fun is going to come in and bonk you on the head whether you like it or not.
I want to know who's puppeteering that Whoopi cushion. Like, they came into work and they're like, hey, you're going to be playing this character today.
The flying Whoopi cushion is credited to John Pattison.
Heck yeah.
Cool.
So they're playing around and Wembley's having a great time, and Sidebottom gets Wembley to make the solemn oath of the Fraggle that Wembley will bring friends. Sidebottom wants more people here. And this is, I think, the first time we get to see that Sidebottom, in addition to being very fun, is kind of manipulative in kind of a sneaky, kind of a subtle way. Not manipulative like a lawyer, but manipulative like a stage magician, but still manipulative.
Mm. Say more about the difference between those two.
I mean, there are some people who are manipulative in a way that's like, oh, you didn't even realize I was doing this, right? Like, oh, I was sneaky behind the back. And there are some people who are manipulative in the like, oh, like, you don't have a choice. I'm doing like Machiavellian politics at you.
Mm.
And there's some people who are manipulative in the like, oh, look at this. It's fun. And of course you want to participate in the fun. And you're like, yeah, oh, this is fun. And then afterwards you're like, ah, oh, boundaries didn't get respected there. Oh, okay. Wow. What?
Right.
Yeah, there's a bit of the power of suggestion that comes into play with Sidebottom. Like, suggesting, and then, well, obviously, then this is the second time we've ever seen the Solemn Oath of the Fraggle, and in making Wembley do it, Wembley has to abide by it, and no matter what, bring the friends back with him.
Mm-hmm. So, we cut back to Doc, and Doc is trying to find Fraggles in his dream interpretation book, and he doesn't find them, but he does find, and I quote, little green creatures, yay high, that wear helmets and are symbols of work and creativity. How did the doozers get into Doc's book? I get that this is a throwaway joke, but this implies that somewhere, someone was putting together a dream dictionary and was aware of doozers and their culture.
Mm-hmm.
This, and maybe I'm going too deep in the paint here, but this, in addition to the previous music box and some of the other things, does seem to imply that in the past there was interaction between all of these species.
Right? It would explain that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a line where Doc is trying to describe this furry little creature lived in a big cave, or no, it was a rock. And I'm like, what's the difference here? If you live in a hole in a rock, you live in a cave?
Well, he doesn't say they live in a hole in the rock. They just live in the rock. They phase through it.
Oh, I see. Well, that caused me to look up, like, how small can a cave be?
Before it's just a hole.
A hole in a rock. Yeah.
is there a full-on, like, answer?
Yeah. Wikipedia says, a cave or cavern is a natural void in the ground, specifically a space large enough for a human to enter. I was like, okay, humans. Anthropocentricity.
I mean, fair. Yeah. I mean, we made Fahrenheit about us.
That's true.
Even though the other one's called Celsius. Anyways, so we cut back to Boober and Wembley, and they're talking to everybody else, and Wembley's like, yeah, no, it's awesome. You gotta come back and find out. And Boober's not happy about this. Boober's having a bad time about this. He's like, no, like, don't do this. And Wembley's like, you wanted a second opinion? And Boober says, not that opinion, which I can relate.
Yeah.
Real quick, before they, like, get to that, when we cut back to the Fraggles, they're playing, we learn, Fraggle Freeze. And I notoriously am really bad at noticing when, like, the top of someone's head, like, comes into frame, or, like, you can see the bottom of a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
scene is, like, chock full of, like, I could see, like, the top of Karen Pearl's head. Like, when they're all, like, racing around, you could see, like, the bottom, like, sleeve of some of the Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very, like, active scene. They're all moving around a ton. And so I'm sure that, like, complicates it. But I was like, I can see some arm rods right there. It was just, like, very interesting to be like, oh, just, like, a little sneak behind the scenes of, like, just the, I don't know, chaos of this Fraggle Freeze.
See, I love that was your take, because my take was, it took me a couple of watches to be like, oh, they're playing freeze tag, because I was deeply unsettled by the fact that there were some people that were moving and other puppets that were just frozen. And I was what is happening?
I did also note some of the Fraggles, like, in the background were clearly, like, just posed. And I was like, they look so strange. But then when they were like, Fraggle freeze, I was like, okay, so they're supposed to be frozen. So that's okay.
Right. And this little shot does so much because there's that little bit of, like, discomfort, which turns out to be foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. It's an establishing shot to show that we, with Wembley and Boober, are going to be going back to the main group. And it fleshes out the world of the main group, because they're not just sitting around waiting for the other two characters to show up. They're in the middle of a game, which is also in and of itself foreshadowing. Like, this little shot does so much.
Yeah, I love it. And we get to see more of that Red and Gobo dynamic in, like, a healthier way.
Yeah.
Of them kind of teasing each other and, like, I got you. Like, no, you missed me by a mile.
They're being competitive, but it's within the realm of they're playing a game and they're having fun.
Yeah.
We also get Matt's postcard where he has found himself at a drive-in movie theater, but doesn't realize. And he comments about the shiny creatures who live in the world all, like, going to sleep together because all the headlights go off. But then he can see their dream, which is the film The Dark Crystal.
It's so good.
I clocked that and it was great.
Good self-promotion, Jim.
I also appreciate the comparison of a drive-in movie theater to shared dreams. That was a cool little parallel.
Yeah. It's kind of like the experience of going to a movie theater of any kind. You're all sharing one collective experience, and it can be often very dreamlike.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the movie. Or it can be nightmarish, also depending on the movie.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch The Dark Crystal with someone afterwards, you're like, man, that was a weird dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you there for that, too? Did you have the same dream I did?
That is how I felt about the movie Sorry to Bother You.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, God, can we watch it?
Sure.
I saw that movie with a bunch of people in theaters, and then we went to a little sandwich place, and I ordered a beer and chugged the entire thing, and then I immediately made plans to see it with a bunch of other people. And the second time I watched it, I did not watch the movie. I just watched my friends watching the movie.
Oh, I love that.
Was Sorry to Bother You... Who did Sorry to...
That's the one with Lakeith Stanfield.
Okay.
It's set in Oakland. It's the
telemarketer. Yeah, I won't ruin it because Beth hasn't seen it. But I love the first half of that movie and the second half of that movie. I was like, did I get drugged and no one told me? What am I watching right now?
No, watching everybody's faces. They're just like, what is happening?
It's so weird.
Oh, boy.
It's up there as one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen.
I love it so much. It's so good.
Okay.
Anyway.
So we get this really nice shot of all of them going to sleep, and they're all splayed out like a little star, and it's really pretty, and it's also cool to know that they're puppets, but that, like, they're set up in such a way that it seems very organic that, of course, they're all lying on their backs with their heads in the middle.
This is such a classic image of Fraggle Rock. Like, if I'm thinking of the TV show Fraggle Rock when I'm out in the world, this is one of those, like, images I'll think of, is the five of them lying down with their heads all touching.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
More spontaneous naps in public spaces.
With friends.
They just flop down where they are, you know, in the middle of wherever it was that they were playing Fraggle Freeze, presumably the Great Hall or somewhere, some other public space. But no, silly creatures can't lie down in public spaces because that means that you might be an unhoused person who, God forbids, needs to sleep outside, and that's illegal.
How dare you be horizontal outside of your home?
That is a very fair point. I was thinking of, if five people just randomly, laid down in, a McDonald's, that might be, a problem for, being stepped on or being in the way of the register. But yes, also, fair critique about how we treat houseless people.
I was just thinking about the time that I was waiting for a bus that was going to be another 20 minutes of waiting at the bus stop, and my back was hurting me so bad that I just needed to lie down. And of course, all I had was a concrete slab bench, and I did it. And the security guy came over. He's like, hey, you're not technically supposed to do that. And I was like, dude, I am in so much pain right now. I'm just waiting for my bus. It's going to take 20 minutes. And I think because it was the night that the Orange Cheeto got elected, I was in an extra bit of existential, oh my God, what is happening with the world right now? And I think he let me slide because of that.
Yeah.
Cool.
But then, we get the dream a dream and see what a dream can be turned into this lovely little lullaby song.
It's so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the harmonies on this one. Mm-hmm. And also it has one of my favorite just sort of chord progressions. The way the chord shifts up on dream a dream and see is... Like it's just that walk up into, it's either into the seventh or into like the major third. I don't remember. I didn't map it out, but it's a very lovely transition that you hear every so often and makes me very happy whenever I hear it.
Aww. I don't speak music, but I love that you do. Oh my gosh, and we get the image of a little flying doozer cupid,
mm-hmm.
little naked baby doozer with wings and a harp.
That was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the lyrics of this song are, they go kind of deep. So this is one of the songs that they redo on Back to the Rock, and it gets a similar treatment to start, but then they kind of change it up a little. That's all. I'm not going to try and spoiler it, but because of the way they change it up in Back to the Rock, it's easy to miss the lyrics. And I love the line, "While our minds run, is there someone dreaming you and me?"
Hmm.
Like, are we all just some other greater creature's dream?
That'd be cool. Be real, though. If we're all that other person's dream, do need therapy.
Yeah.
So they're all excited, and they're, except for Boober. Boober's clearly having a terrible time. And Sidebottom's like, "Oh, yeah, this is great. Hey, you should come back again." And Gobo just sort of casually is like, "Oh, we already promised we would only come back once, but, you know, duh." And that's when Sidebottom is like, "Let's play Fraggle Freeze." And this turns from cute to psychic horror show.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I've been playing Baldur's Gate, and like having you frozen inside someone else's mind is exactly the kind of something that a mind flayer would do to you.
No.
That's like psychic warfare, and it's terrifying, and it's legitimately unsettling to be like, "Oh yeah, they're all stuck in Boober's subconscious, frozen."
Yeah. I mean, this is what my, fortunately I don't have sleep paralysis dreams very often, but when I do, this is what they're like. Like, there's no like monster sitting on my chest. I just am in a real life situation where I cannot move my body. But at least in that version, I'm in my own dream and not someone else's.
Yeah.
I had the most annoying sleep paralysis dream, and I told myself I was only going to talk about like one dream for the dream analysis portion of this episode, and I lied.
Right.
This one's short, though. I was like, so you know when you're like lying there trying to fall asleep, and then you dream, and in the dream you're also lying there trying to fall asleep, but while you're asleep? It was that, except in the dream I was like trying to fall asleep and there was a bug, and it just kept kind of like doing a flyby my face, and I was like, I just gotta tuck my head under the blankets, why can't I tuck my head? And I finally woke up enough to tuck my head under the blankets and then realized I was awake and too hot, and I was like, man.
But was there really a bug in real life?
No.
Well, there you go.
I guess I did technically avoid the bug, but at what cost?
Yeah, oh gosh, this sequence is, it does get a little disturbing in seeing how Sidebottom can wield his power irresponsibly.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, when we go back to see them sleeping, they're all just, like, moaning and groaning in their sleep, too, and so you're seeing the way that it's affecting them in the real world, also. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really unsettling.
Yeah. And Boober says, "I told you fun was dangerous." Like, this is something he says several times throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the reason why he does not want to engage with Sidebottom, is because he believes that fun is dangerous. And right now he's getting proved right.
It's interesting to me, and this keys into what I think is sort of the key of it. And I want to talk a little bit about IFS or IFN or whatever the heck. I think it's IFS. So it stands for intra-family system. And the idea is looking at all the different, like, selves of ourself that we have had to use to, you know, survive and keep ourselves safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe we have a hard time accepting and understanding the purpose that they serve and being grateful and expressing that and helping to accept them for what they have done for us.
Yeah.
And it's really clear here that Boober understands that the part of himself that understands fun is also a part of himself that doesn't really have, like, empathy and is a lot more manipulative and self-centered.
Yeah. So it makes sense that he would want to keep that part of himself away from his friends.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is a really deep window into Boober as a person and why he is a lot of the way he is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool. And we get to see him actively choose, like, "Hey, no, I'm not going to let you, this part of me, hurt my friends. And then they get to have this whole conversation about like, well, but I just want to come out. And he's like, well, I'm not going to let you out if you hurt my friends. And they find a little bit of a compromise. And you get to see them almost reintegrate. Like, they sort of almost phase into each other and then they stop. And they're like, well, we just started talking. Let's stay separate for now.
Well, so I love that Sidebottom gives, you know, when you're arguing with part of yourself and the other part of yourself, like, makes a good point. You're like, oh, darn you. Boober, like, earlier in the episode, Sidebottom's like, well, what am I supposed to do? And Boober's like, try nothing. And now Sidebottom turns that back on himself. Boober's wondering, what should I do in this horrible situation? And Sidebottom says, hey, why don't you try nothing?
Right.
That's what you always do.
Right.
Oh, dang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not to play devil's advocate, like, I was really conflicted on the character of Sidebottom, because we do see him use his power in, like, a not chill way. But also, you know, the only person, Fraggle, he's had to interact with is Boober, who does not like him. And he's said that he's lonely and that he wants to have, like, friends, but he keeps, like, being kept, like, shoved down. And I don't know, it's almost like maybe our conversations about Marlin of just, like, when you're treated this way, you sometimes act in ways that you should not, and that ends up hurting other people, or can hurt other people.
Yup.
And so, and I mean, it feels intentional, where, like, and that comes out also in the conversation, I think, with Sidebottom and Boober, where they realize that the dynamic they have, like, is not working.
I mean, it really, I think you're definitely right, and I think the thing that they realize is that the solution isn't sustainable, because what they're doing right now is, he's like, oh, Sidebottom might hurt my friends, I'm never going to let him out. And that, like, if you were in a cage that no one was ever going to let you out of, you would try to figure out how to get out of the cage.
Totally.
The solution is to be like, all right, I'm going to let you out a little bit, and we're going to talk about it, and I'm okay with a little bit of fun, but as soon as you hurt my friends, you go back in the cage for a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I also was, like, curious, because what Sidebottom is supposed to represent, like, if he's both, like, the fun side of Boober, but also, like, the reckless side of Boober.
Right.
And we see Boober railing against the idea of fun for so long, like, through the entire episode. And it's strange, because his friends are, like, all about fun, and that's why they like that element of Sidebottom.
But his friends are also really impractical and always wind up, like, hurting each other by accident.
That's true. I mean, Boober is impractical as well sometimes, depending on the episode.
I would say a lot less often.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Not never, but you know.
You know, I'm sure also it didn't help. Again, I watched this episode very late at night, and so I was trying to wrap my brain around it while watching it, of being like, are we supposed to empathize with Sidebottom? Are we supposed to see him as, like, an entirely negative, like, component of Boober? But yeah, I think that it's obviously more complex than that, and him agreeing to, like, you know, you can come out sometimes, and we get the very end where, like, Boober, like, jangles his belly and you hear the Sidebottom bells and he's like, okay, you're there, I just wanted to check.
Yeah.
And that'll be interesting to see if that, you know, pops up a bit more in the future, if Boober gets to allow himself to have little moments of fun. But, like, in, I don't know, I guess it comes down to, like, everything in moderation, like,
yeah,
letting Sidebottom out in all of the right moments, but also not letting him take control. That was a big moment near the end of the episode where Boober's like, oh, wait, you didn't win. I was in control this time.
So first, it's important that when Boober says, that's it, I've had enough, what he does is he self-yeets to tackle Sidebottom.
Oh, yeah.
And is like, I'm not gonna let you go until you agree to let my friends go. And then the conversation they have, Sidebottom says, no, Boober, you win. You always win. And this is not the first time he said that. He said, you always win. What I don't understand is, why are you fighting with me? And then Boober has to actually think about that and say, well, we're fighting because you're fun and dangerous, and it gets out of control. And Sidebottom is just, like, laughing and dancing over on the side. And Boober goes, wait a minute. We had a fight and I won. I'm the one who's in charge around here. And Sidebottom's like, did I ever say you weren't?
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a fundamental shift for Boober, that he's like, oh, I can let things get a little bit wild and loose because I'm the one who's still in control at the end of the day. I can say, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, because he is Sidebottom. You know, earlier in the episode, like we mentioned, you know, when Boober's describing this nightmare, like, and he describes him, and Wimbley goes, oh, so it's you. Like, Wimbley, like, nails it on the head before we even see Sidebottom that, you know, Boober is grappling with the different parts of himself where, you know, maybe he does have moments where he wants to lean a little bit more into fun and being reckless, but he's worried where that will take him because it's so different than his, like, very diligent, like, death and laundry personality.
Right.
It is interesting. It reminds me a lot of, because I work with a lot of kids who have been systematically screwed over by all the systems that they've lived in, and they understandably have a lot of anger issues, which is super valid, and not a lot of practice at dealing with that. And a lot of the messaging that they get is like, anger is never okay, and of course that's trash, and so they don't listen to it. And one of the opportunities that I get as a male teacher is the one to be like, hey, like, look, I'm not gonna tell you not to listen to your anger. A man should listen to his anger. I'm just going to tell you, make sure you listen to all the other parts of yourself first. Don't let anger be the one making your decisions. You need to make your own decisions. Listen to it, sure, but also listen to your joy. Also listen to your sadness. Also listen to your curiosity. And then after you've listened to all of those, you make the call, because your feelings can't make you do anything. They can make you want to do stuff really badly, but you are always the one making that choice.
I like that reframe.
Thank you. It has been polished over many years.
It definitely makes me think of Inside Out, where anger is just another emotion in the workplace of Riley's emotions. And I love that he's there for a reason. Like, he is there to point out when things are unfair.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, is one of the things that they work with people who have anger issues about isn't just like, what do you do when you get angry? It's, what expectations are you holding that are causing you to get this angry? And how can we reframe those expectations?
Yeah. And if it is pointing towards, you know, a real actual injustice that you need to do something about, that's very legit. Like, then you, you know, try and like understand like, ah, okay, this is the injustice that anger is pointing me towards. Now, how do I move towards doing something about that? Without coming from purely a place of anger. Like, anger has a seat at the table.
Yeah.
But I'm still the one making the calls.
What's that Tumblr post that was going around? It's like, your emotions are fish, but you are not the fish, you are the pond.
Ooh, I haven't heard that one.
Oh, that's good.
And I love this moment where they've sung this little song together, and Sidebottom's kind of like trying to incorporate into Boober. And Boober's like, whoa, what are you doing? We've only just met. And Sidebottom says, don't kid yourself. We've known each other a long time. And then Boober gets this great line. Well, if anybody's going to be part of me, it might as well be you.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's the thing that I think is really the point of like IFS in general, is like, the parts of you that exist exist for a reason.
Yeah.
And they've been doing something.
You have survived thus far because of the skills that they learned how to keep you safe.
Yeah. I always worry that I'm taking up too much space in podcast worlds, especially as the only dude on the podcast, but this reminded me of one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite songwriters, and I would love to pull up the lyrics if I may.
Do it.
Cool. This guy's talking about his depression, and he's like, look, my depression is separate to my emotions, and its job is to isolate and attack any positive feelings, and that's okay. I have lots of parts of me that have jobs I don't understand, that buzz around poking and pinching at this and that, doing the job they were put there to do. My depression is one of them. It sits in my head with a big red stamp marked invalid and dutifully voids any feelings of hope or faith or happiness, day up and down, and never ever clocks out. And like, is it waiting for me to say, good job there, get some sleep? Is it just going to keep working harder and harder until I tell it its efforts have counted for something, that it's not just a mistake? I want to say stop there, but I don't think it needs to, because a part of me with a preternatural knack for finding the tiniest speck of joy and a towering stack of meaningless data, I could use someone like that. Give it more sociable hours and some backdated holiday pay, and that stamp, the one marked invalid, well, I'll buy my depression a new one that says something better, and if it still prefers the old one, then maybe I'll just chisel off the first two letters.
So wait, those are song lyrics, or that was you writing about song
lyrics?
That's
a song lyric. That is not mine.
Oh, okay.
That is my current favorite songwriter of all time. That is the Narcissist Cookbook.
Wow.
Highly recommend.
Oh.
Good, right?
I like thinking about stuff like that.
I'll send you, I'll throw a link to the album in the group chat.
Perfect. Oh, Boober gets this wonderful line. He says, I'm distinctly unhilarious, and I have a splitting headache.
Mm-hmm.
Now please leave me alone. And then they do! And they go off and talk about the cool adventure that they just have, and Boober gets a moment alone with Sidebottom. But I love that he's just like, I need to be alone right now. And his friends are like, cool, we get it.
Awesome. And then we cut back to Doc, and he can't find the Fraggles, and he's all frustrated. And the thing that's really cute to me is he calls them all these silly creatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask, have y'all ever had dreams that were very clearly your brain just trying to tell you stuff?
Probably.
All the time.
Yeah.
Kahira, is this, I don't know. I'm always,
well,
I,
okay.
If you're not up for sharing them on air, that's totally fine. But I love hearing about dreams that are specifically like, oh, my subconscious was trying to smack me upside the head here or stuff like that.
I can't think about one that was far enough in the past that I'd be comfortable talking about.
Fair.
It. I also tend to have like recurring dreams centering on like four or five different like themes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, there's the one where, like, oh, no, I'm back in high school and I haven't studied for the I never showed up to class and now it's final exam day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a pretty common one. But I will also have what I call labyrinth dreams,
mm-hmm.
where I'm trying to either find a thing or a person, or I'm just trying to get out of wherever I am, trying to go home, trying to, you know, find the right bus, whatever it is. But no matter how far I walk, and it's always in, there are no dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a real labyrinth versus a maze. Like, a maze has lots of dead ends. In a labyrinth, there's only one way you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like that no matter which way I go, I'm still not, like, escaping the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat down and was like, well, if I'm calling these labyrinth dreams, and I can do whatever I want in my dream realm, I'm going to call in the characters from Labyrinth the movie as my allies.
Yo!
Oh my god.
Yo!
That's awesome.
If I need to just, like, take a break and have a cup of tea, I'm going to go meet the worm. If I decide that I'm stuck here because of some evil power that's keeping me here, I'm going to find Hoggle and help and have him help me, like, undermine the big bad guy. But the one that actually worked was when that wonderful moment at the end of the movie where Sarah is able to escape when she realizes, you have no power over me. And when I later recognized that I was stuck in a labyrinth dream and that I had those tools at my disposal, I had that echoing moment of, you have no power over me. And then I was able to escape.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
It was rad as hell. Adam, I want you to talk about the incorporation thing, because I remember you talking about a dream that did that. And I was like, I am not at that level yet. I am not yet at that point where the thing, like I was saying, the thing that I was trying to escape from, because like, haha, I can fly. Well, suddenly this thing can fly too. And then, do you know which dream I'm talking about?
I don't know. Do you have any keywords or anything that you can remind me?
Just some person or aspect that you were trying to escape from. And then you were realizing, well, this thing that, or person that I'm trying to escape from is an aspect of myself, just like everything in the dream world. And therefore, the best method is to try and reincorporate it into myself. And you were able to somehow do that into the dream, like suck the other person into your stomach or something, or like, you know what I mean?
I just like full on absorbed the entire, I forgot about that one. I absorbed them and then I absorbed the entire dream and I was just kind of sitting there for a little while in the void.
I aspire to that level of lucid dreaming. I think that is so cool.
I'd forgotten about that. I should have written that one down. I don't remember anything else aside
from
that
moment.
You wrote
it on Facebook somewhere.
I did? Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
Great. It'll pop up at some point then. That's funny because the dream I wanted to share was also one that pops up on Facebook every so often, but is a completely different one.
I love Facebook memories for teaching me how far I've come.
It's so nice. I don't post song lyrics randomly anymore.
Same.
I've grown so much.
I'm going to post some song lyrics to cryptically let y'all know how I'm doing right now.
With no context.
Decipher these show
Spoiler,
tunes.
Spoiler, it's not good.
Yeah.
Julia, do you have any, like, dreams that you, like, look back and you're like, oh, that was clearly me trying to tell me something. Dang.
I mean, I'm sure that there is. I dream pretty frequently, but because of the way my, like, neurodivergent brain works, if I don't write it down, it doesn't typically stick with me for very long. Mm-hmm. I also am not a lucid dreamer. There's been like a time or two where I've in a dream I've been like, oh, this is a dream, but I don't think I've ever had the experience of then immediately being like, time to fly, you know, maybe just like grounding myself a bit more in it and not worrying as much, you know. I dream the ones that like stick out to me, like dream a lot about like somebody in my life dying, or lot of dreams tied up with like insecurity, or if I'm like really stressed with like organizing or work, that will like manifest itself in my dreams. And so nothing like of a dream being like, hey, this is something that you need to like be paying attention to. It's more like something that's like overwhelming me, or, you know, yeah, just something that I'm feeling like insecure or not like fully realized in life, like will then like just manifest itself in my dream. Or yeah, I don't know. I used to write my dreams down a lot more and think about them when I was like in college, and now I don't do that anymore, which if I had the time, that would be really interesting to do. But, you know, I'll wake up, I'll tell my partner about a dream, but then I kind of just let it go for the rest of the day, I suppose.
Fair. I had one that always pops up, and every time it pops up, I always read it. It was, I was in college and I was like an RA, and at my dorm, I was like going outside to meet, because in the dream I had a wife, and in the dream we were getting divorced, and she was there with our 11-year-old and our 6-year-old sons, who were just sort of like uncomfortable and playing video games on their like Game Boys, or like I think it was like a Switch or something. And so I like went up and got the divorce papers, and when I came back down, the 11-year-old was like super excited because he had been grinding for this item. It was like a rare drop item called the white silk handkerchief that gave you a luck bonus. And he was excited. And he was like, I just got it. I got it as a drop. And the 6-year-old's like, why don't you just go to the store and buy it? You can just buy it at the store. And the 11-year-old's like, oh, no, no, no. If you get it as a drop instead of buying it from the store, the luck bonus is higher. It's like a passive. It's there. It doesn't say it, but it's there. Hmm. The 6-year-old's like, no, it's the same. It's the same. You can see it on the item. It's the same. And the 11-year-old's like, no, 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 it's like, it's not a visible thing, but there's an extra luck bonus if you get it as a drop. And I kind of lean over and I'm like, he's right, you get a bigger bonus if you do it as a drop. And my ex-wife in the dream, like, turns on me and is like, don't get in the middle of this. I bought the game thing. I bought the game guide. It's the same thing either way, but out.
Hmm.
And I, like, turned away from her and I knelt down and I looked at them and I said, trust your in-game experience and never underestimate the power of the things people aren't going to tell you.
Ooh.
And then in the dream, I went back up to my room and cried. And I always trip out because I posted that dream on the exact same day that I changed my Facebook relationship status to be in a relationship with the most manipulative person I have ever dated.
Oof.
And it is an absolute trip that even then some part of my subconscious is like, dude, dude, dude,
get out, get out,
something's going on, man, you should be careful.
Oh, dang,
crazy, right,
man? Freaking brains
and dreams and stuff and processing things through narrative. Humans are wild and fraggles are wilder.
Right? So, okay, what if listeners are like, oh man, I want a lucid dream, that sounds rad. It's not easy, but you can teach yourself. I started being able to remember my dreams more frequently, which is the first step, by starting a dream journal. Just like, no matter how banal the details, write them down when you wake up. And if you do that consistently, you will start to remember them more often, and then you'll start to be able to engage with them on a more complex level. Like, I started out not being able to fly in anything other than like a contraption, or I could like, you know, hover a few inches off the ground, or I could like, you know, take big jumps like I was on the moon. And then it took me years to learn how to be like, aha, I can just fly by leaping into the air and not looking down and focusing on like pure joy. And that will let me fly every single time.
Hmm. I wanted to say, yeah, dream journaling is really huge. And also just like studying story analysis is really big, because dreams are narratives and your ability to process story is the lens that your dreams are trying to communicate to you through.
Yep.
So,
Joseph Campbell stuff.
Oh, yeah. His soup is so good.
So, Adam, I'm happy to say that we will see Sidebottom twice more.
Yes!
I did remember that.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
I knew he was going to come back.
I wish it was more often than that, but at least he's recurring at all.
At least we get it. That's phenomenal. I kind of hope he gets to step in and save the day and, like, be like, actually, this is my area of expertise.
And here's why fun is important.
I got to be in a situation where I was like, I don't actually know. Something's wrong here, and I'm not sure. Hey, depression, what am I missing? And my depression was like, ho-ho. You called me.
Wearing a jaunty little hat.
I think he was more surprised, actually.
Okay. But
anyways.
I could be wearing a jaunty little hat. Why not?
You know what? I'll ask.
Yeah.
Anyways.
See if he wants a jaunty little hat.
Beth, do you have anything about the international versions?
So, Muppet Wiki says about the UK version, the captain wakes from a nightmare and describes seeing a terrible, wee furry creature with huge staring eyes. Gobo overhears this and counters, huh, he can talk. Sprocket makes a connection between the dream and the hole in the wall, but the captain goes on to reveal he saw the shadow of a sinister-looking man. He's sure it was Mr. Birtwistle, the owner of the lighthouse, who once tried to evict the captain and Sprocket from the lighthouse. Percy the Post... The Post? Maybe they mean Postman?
Postman?
Arrives earlier than usual. The captain becomes worried again when a letter from Birtwistle arrives and recounts that the furry creatures in his dream were swimming. In Uncle Matt's postcard, he has wandered into an amusement park and goes to sleep in a boxcar of a ghost train attraction.
What?
Oh, I'm glad we didn't get that. He wakes up inside a haunted house and is very scared. David Barclay is seen sharing the boxcar with Matt and is puppeteering him in several shots. The captain finally reads the letter and is relieved to learn that Birtwistle is asking them to look after his niece's two pet gerbils during a holiday. The captain concludes that the creatures he saw in his bad dream must have been the gerbils.
That's wild. There's so much going on there.
Wild.
A lot.
It's so different. Wow. So, there you go.
All right. Y'all want to plug your pluggables? Tell people where they can find you?
No, how are we going to make the world fragglier?
Oh, yeah. You can make the world fragglier by spelling Whoopi however you want to. However you want. Just trust your heart. Except you can't spell it Whoopeigh. No, not allowed.
Ugh. Yeah.
That's the only one, though. Everything else, have fun with it.
It's okay to embrace all of the parts of you, even maybe the ones that scare you, but also moderation is key of just finding that balance and figuring out what's best for you.
Well, I'm just gonna say what I said before. More naps in public spaces. More group naps in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, friends, thank you for sharing this dream with me.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
You can find me at Beth Anna Cook on social media. That's Anna with two N's. And occasionally writing stuff for Tough Pigs.
And you can find me at Geek Girl Grown Up on Instagram, juliagaskill.com for some poetry. Also occasionally on Tough Pigs. And this probably will be my last pitch because I think like this might be the last one before it. But there is a poetry festival in Portland called the Bigfoot Poetry Festival. Come out if you are in the area. It's a fun time. Lots of poems. Good people. That's it. I'm so tired from running it. Okay.
Awesome.
You're doing great.
You're doing so great. You can find me in your dreams behind that nondescript door that you just walked past, but knock first because I might be on the phone.
All right. That is it for this episode. Reminder to check out toughpigs.com. Give us a good review on your podcatcher of choice, and we will see you next time.
Don't forget to f*** your cares away.
Dad, no! Fraggle talk.
I can't leave that in.
Now you're gonna censor it and it's gonna be the final callback.
You know, I have your voice saying don't forget to dance your cares away a million times. I could just copy and paste it.
But will you?
That's less fun.
Oh boy, who knows what I'm gonna do. Good luck, future me.
Hi, future Beth. I'm sorry and you're welcome.
Fraggle Talk Classic is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Fraggle Talk art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Fraggle Rock mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Jim Henson Company. All rights reserved. The Fraggle Rock theme song, written by Philip Balsam and Dennis Lee, is used with permission. Special thanks to the Jim Henson Company and the entire Fraggle Rock family. For more from Tough Pigs, please find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, TeePublic, and Patreon. Fraggle Talk Classic is produced and edited by me, Beth Cook. Thank you to Joe Hennis, the Tough Pigs Muppet Fan Podcast Executive Producer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time down at Fraggle Talk. And we, sorry, I lost my point.
I found my point. Listener, I am pointing.
I was going to say.
That's a joke.
Great.
Get it?
Great joke for an audio medium.
Oh, fantastic joke. Well, I mean, this is the point being, and it's going to fight the line being, and that's how geometry wars start.
It's a callback.
Ah, they've got their war planes.
Oh, no. You've been sitting on that one, haven't you?
Nope.
Oh, geez.
My brain just pooped it out.
So Marjorie's doing this thing where...
Yep.